This is The Pleasure of Your Company by the Asexual of Spades, a BBC Merlin fanfic. It is rated for general audiences and no archive warnings apply. It features the relationships Leon/Morgana, Leon and Morgana, Gwen and Leon and Morgana, and Arthur Pendragon, Knights of the Round Table, and Leon. Tags include Hurt Comfort, Redeemed Morgana, Insecure Leon, Sir Leon the Long-Suffering, and Love Confessions. Summary. When the feared sorceress Morgana's wickedness is revealed to have been exacerbated by a poisonous mind charm at the hands of her sister Morgoz, Camelot becomes the unwitting host to the last of the high priestesses of the old religion. She's not to be trusted out and about the Citadel, and so must be placed under constant watch. Who better to assign, then, than Camelot's first knight himself? Leon has missed the Lady Morgana, he can admit, and as the years belie the changes they both have undergone, they find themselves hovering much closer to friends than to hostage and guard. And in truth, there might be more to both of them than they initially cared to admit. You're punishing yourself. Leon pauses, halfway through filling Morgana's cup with tea. I beg your pardon, my lady? Morgana gives him a look that says she's not about to have this argument again, but she nods for him to continue pouring. She waits until the cup is full, and he set down the teapot to speak again. You're punishing yourself. I would hardly count tea with you as a punishment, he remarks as he takes his seat, pouring his own cup. Sugar or honey? Honey. She holds out the cup to allow him to add the honey, and you know very well what I'm referring to. I assure you, he says with a softness that most might deem unfit for the company to whom he speaks, that I am far from adverse to spending time with you, my lady, despite your current situation. What an artful word for imprisonment, Morgana remarks wryly as she stirs her tea. It's a wonder Arthur's so bad at diplomacy if it's truly you who taught him. I wouldn't dream of remarking on that. Come, you're neither polite nor company. You can speak your mind. When he allows himself a smile, yet shakes his head all the same, she rolls her eyes. I can't imagine Camelot's first night volunteering for guard duty. It is far from simply guard duty, my lady. Oh, of course. Not every guard is qualified to stand vigil over the wicked sorceress who almost brought Camelot to ruin. It's his turn to give her a slightly chiding look. I would hardly use the word wicked to describe you. Perhaps you would prefer evil? It is far more straightforward. Or scheming? That's a good one. Her brow quirks. Perhaps even wretched. Wicked and evil are cut from the same cloth, he says instead. And do not fully describe how you were affected by Morgoz's own desire for revenge against Camelot. Scheming, perhaps. But then any tactician could be described as such. He sets his cup down and slides the platter of fresh rolls towards her. And the only wretched thing about you is the suffering you have had to endure. Her hand trembles slightly, but she hides it well, setting her cup down and reaching for a roll with a sigh. It's a wonder you aren't a poet instead of a knight. I'm afraid the king's idea of poetry isn't quite what I have in mind for myself, no. He reaches for a roll too, tearing off a small piece as she takes a bite. Good? She hums. He smiles and tastes it too. The baker has done an excellent job with this batch indeed. Warm and sweet, paired perfectly with the suggested tea. He will have to stop by and pass on their compliments. They sit there for a moment, simply enjoying it. For Morgana's foot nudges his leg. You're avoiding the subject. On the contrary, I believe I have made it quite clear that I enjoy spending time with you. Not that. He shifts to ease a cramp in his arm. Why else would you believe me to be punishing myself? You're isolating yourself from the other knights. From Arthur. From Merlin. Morgana runs her finger over the edge of her teacup. You know this post demands several hours. More, in your case, since there are so few guards willing to relieve you from your shifts. You know these chambers are on the other side of the castle from everyone else, especially Arthur and Merlin, and you know that none of them will ask you how your days have been when you have spent them all in here with me. She leaves the cup aside and leans onto her elbows, interlacing her fingers. You, of all people, know how important morale is for a warrior. So tell me, if purposely distancing yourself from your brothers in arms isn't punishing yourself, what else would you be doing? Leon's hand does not shake as he puts down his cup, nor does he break eye contact as he turns to face her properly. He mirrors her position and tilts his head. Have you grown bored, my lady? Her brow furrows. What are you talking about? He indicates the position they've taken. Have we something to negotiate? Or is this a debate? Morgana seems to realize the somewhat confrontational way she's positioned herself in the conversation, and lets her hand slide back along the table, reaching for her teacup with an almost petulant air. All I'm saying is that I'm the one who's supposed to be undergoing the process of atonement and redemption. I see no reason for you to be acting as though you're doing the same. He allows himself to relax as well, picking up the discarded roll. I don't know how many times I can assure you that I enjoy my time spent with you. That's not the punishment I'm referring to, she says, her voice a slight bit harsher, and you know it. At this point, you're not even being subtle. Leon debates holding out a moment longer before he accepts defeat, taking another sip of his tea. You are right, of course, my lady. I suppose I am, well, I don't know if I'm punishing myself as much as indulging a bad habit. Morgana doesn't gloat, simply taps her fingers on the table. And what bad habit would this be? Feeding an unfair suspicion. She groans. If you're just going to be vague, I'm going to start throwing those rolls at you until you give me a plain answer. Speaking of which, he tears off another small piece and eats it. I don't wish you to burden yourself with the insecurities of a foolish old knight. I am confined to one set of rooms with the same foolish old knight for company, she says without missing a beat. Please, burden me and alleviate me of my boredom, or else I'll start trying to take over the kingdom again. He allows himself a chuckle as she smiles behind the rim of her teacup. But, as before, she is correct, and so he spares another moment to gather his thoughts before he speaks once more. I'm sure it did not escape your notice. Has not, I should say. That I am unique amongst the king's trusted knights. I am the longest serving. I served his father before him for many, many years, and I am perhaps what most would consider the typical knight. Morgana hums, cradling the warm mug to her chest. As such, I have taken a position of seniority amongst the king's knights, both as his first knight and in the Knights of the Round Table, by virtue of my experience, or age, or the relationship I have with the king. He hesitates a moment before adding, I do not think it to be an overstatement to say I am often the voice of reason when conflicts arise, friendly or fearful. He's rewarded with a small snort and a nod, but she gestures for him to keep going. When he hesitates again, she speaks. I have no other confidant that I would spill your secrets to. Do not feel the need to watch your words so closely. Thank you, my lady. Still, it takes him a moment of wrestling with himself to figure out just what it is he wants to put words to. After all, words have within themselves a power. If he speaks it, it becomes real. And despite all his accolades, he is not sure he has the courage to confront the reality of the amorphous shapes in his mind and heart. Morgana allows him his silence, only prompting for another cup of tea when hers runs dry. I care for my brothers deeply, he says as he pours. I would die for them, as I know they would die for me. It is no burden to care for them when they fall or are otherwise uncertain. I would gladly go without sleep if it meant they would be able to rest comfortably. The next words stick to the inside of his throat, and so he swallows them and tries again. I am grateful to be the one they turn to, the one they can rely on. It is a position that I regard with great honor and privilege, and I would do anything in my power to maintain such a level of trust. Yet again, they hook barbs into the side of his throat, and he drinks and eats to unstick them. I have noticed that sometimes my efforts to join in their fun are regarded as unsuccessful. He glances toward the window, through which the faint sounds from the training fields can be heard. I believe Gawain has referred to me as the end of the night in the past. I do not think I always used to be. His next words feel almost treasonous to speak, and so he hesitates once more. Sometimes I think about leaving Camelot, he confesses. If I am truly so changed from the man I once thought I was. If I may be so selfish as to ask you not to, comes Morgana's voice. Who else would guard me as politely and indulgently as you? And once you are no longer in a position to need guarding, he looks at her. When you have atoned and redeemed, and the kingdom has welcomed you back with open arms, which they will, my lady, upon my honor, they will, then what am I to do? Will Camelot find another responsibility that they deem only I capable of shouldering? I could always pretend to be power-hungry again, she offers, and they both laugh, for they know she wouldn't. He shakes his head ruefully. I suppose I am, as I said, a foolish old knight who has grown weary of being so old and foolish. Morgana is quiet for a moment before she puts down her cup and calls for his attention. He gives it. You are not foolish, Leon. It's because you aren't foolish that you feel this way. The suspicion, the one you referred to indulging. It's that no one would bother to come and look for you or care for you if you weren't there, right? You are perceptive as always, my lady, he says quietly, the slight ache in his chest at how effectively her words have pierced him. Are you seriously considering leaving Camelot? No, I fear I am too much a coward. I enjoy the life I have here, truly I do, and I care for the people here, the family I have made for myself. I could no more leave it than I could no longer wield a sword to defend them. After a moment, he glances at her, a smile tugging at the corner of his lips. And should you ever decide to turn your appetites to power? She laughs, looking for a moment the young lady Camelot lost so long ago, before she reaches across the small distance between them to take his hand. He allows it, bringing hers up to press a courtly kiss to its back.
"Don't leave me with these fools,"
she stage whispers with mock and earnest conviction alike. "I won't, my lady." A knock interrupts them, Leon standing and opening the door to see another guard. "The king has asked for you." He nods, turning to retrieve his sword from its place near his chair and bowing his head to Morgana. "I will see you later." Had he noticed the thoughtful look on her face as he left, he may have been more prepared for the crowd inside her chambers when he arrives for his shift the next day. As it stands, he can only look on in silent bewilderment as Morgana opens the door to reveal Arthur, Merlin, Gwen, and the rest of the knights already inside, chatting and laughing as though this were the tavern.
"My lady," he greets, more out of instinct than anything.
Oi, there he is. Gwen beams at him from his seat on the floor, waving him inside. "Get over here and settle an argument, would you?"
"What argument would this be?"
Elian rolls his eyes. "Gwen's trying to convince us that it's a noble tradition to eat entirely apples for one of the festival meals, which I think is complete and utter. Look, just because you don't like apples doesn't mean that it..."
"You know we've been to feasts here, right?
Those are for everyone, not just the nobles."
"He's right," Arthur adds. "Since when is Arthur on Gwen's side about anything? It was a massive fight to change it with my father."
"This has been going on for quite a while," Gwen informs him, and Merlin hums. "They think you'll be the tiebreaker." Leon simply nods, still attempting to wrap his head around why, exactly, all of them are here. Gwen notices his silence and throws his arms up.
"Well, back us up here, Leon."
Leon glances around at the sea of expectant faces before he sighs.
"You're mistaken, Gwen. There was never a feast consisting of only apples."
"Ha!" Elian smacks Gwen's shoulders. "I knew it, you..."
"It was pumpkins."
Gwen throws his head back and laughs as Elian splutters in disbelief. Leon simply smiles. The squash were suited for little other than decorations to the peasant folk, and so the crown decided to host a feast where the castle's kitchens would do the cooking and everyone would partake. Then, of course, there was the pulp-throwing contest, during which people would take the leftover seeds and pulp and throw them at each other.
"I can never tell," Lancelot mutters to Merlin, "when he's joking." "None of us can. It's a skill."
"Come, sit," Arthur says, waving him over to the last empty chair. "Stop standing by the door like that." He comes obediently, sitting and letting both Gwen and Merlin shove all sorts of food and drink towards him. Pear juice, roasted duck, the bread rolls that the baker makes twice a week.
"Hold on a moment."
"What?" Percival laughs when he looks up in surprise.
"Did you think we didn't know your favorites?"
Well, you're the only one so far who's weaseled their way out of letting Arthur spoil you with what you like," Merlin says as Arthur tries to shush him. "So we decided to surprise you instead."
"To Leon," Gwen announces, standing and holding up a goblet, "without whom we'd be so much worse off than we are."
The rest of them toast and drink, and Arthur leans over to grab his shoulder. "Enjoy yourself, old friend," he says quietly as the rest of them return to their merriment. "You're very bad at it."
"Yes," Leon says weakly. "I suppose I am."
"Indulge," comes Morgana's voice as Arthur gets pulled into another argument and he turns to see her holding out one of the rolls.
"It's the least you can do after I've been besieged by fools."
His eyes widen as he takes in the true meaning of her words, taking the roll with no small amount of wonder.
"Thank you, my lady."
"Well, I figured it's the least I could do, after all you've done for me."
"That, and I'm pretty sure her crush hasn't faded," Gwen chimes in and several things happen at once.
One, Morgana whips around and hisses, "Gwen!" Two, her cheeks turn a pale pink. Three, Leon feels his own do the same. Gwen looks unapologetic, shrugging as Morgana glares at her. "If I had to listen to it for years, I'd imagine it's lingered." Morgana's features twist and contort.
"Why would you say that? I do not!"
"Yes, you do," Arthur calls helpfully, and she throws a roll at him, one he can't even be bothered to catch for laughing.
"Why did I agree not to kill you again?"
Leon just manages to wrap his head around what's just occurred in time to catch her hand with his own. Morgana quiets, staring at him with an apprehension that does not become her. One, because he has always known her to support herself, first and foremost. And two, because, well, it's quite unwarranted. "As I said," he murmurs, Lona for the two of them, "I have always enjoyed my time with you." The flush on both of their cheeks grows stronger as he slowly raises her hand to his lips once more, chastely brushing a kiss to her knuckles. A small smile finds itself on her face, and he smooths his gloved thumb over her fingers.
"Boo!" Gwen hollers. "Kiss her properly!"
It takes him not even a second to grab another roll and throw it at Gwen.